process and her court-appointed attorney and guardian ad litems on the ground there in the Rio Grande Valley. And the Office of Refugee Resettlement defied that court order ignored it.
We have to leave it there.
Thus violating their own policy that goes back to 2008.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. That's Susan Hayes, legal director of Jane's Due Process. And also thank you to Jennifer Dalvin of the ACLU Reproductive Freedom Project. Nermeen Sheikh and Juan Gonzalez will be speaking tonight at the Philadelphia Free Library, and Juan will be at Seattle on Friday night. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
It's 7:59. This is KBOO Portland. In just a couple of minutes, Lisa Loving hosts Voices from the Edge. And Lisa's guest this morning is essayist and fiction writer Alex Baer. And Alex has a collection of short stories called Planet Grimm. And Lisa and Alex are going to talk about life, and they'll take your phone calls. At 9 o'clock, Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, Air Cascadia at 10, Flashpoints at 10:15. This KBOO program is made possible, in part, by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music. PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. It's 8 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton screening of Romeo is Bleeding on Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Romeo is Bleeding is a documentary that follows Dante Clark, a young poet transcending the violence in his hometown of Richmond, California, by writing about his experiences. Dante and the like-minded youth of the city mount an urban adaptation of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, with the hope of starting a dialogue about violence in the city. PDX Poetic Justice's John Slaughter and his group of poets will be reading some of their works before the screening. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton screening of Romeo is Bleeding on Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 8:02. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving. And today, you know, we often examine issues, especially political and social issues, one by one on these airwaves. You know, for example, we'll do a show about the lack of affordable housing or a show about racism, sexist harassment. Last week, we were talking about Islamophobia with a poet, remember? But these issues don't hit us one at a time. They hit us all at once. And that's why today our guest is local essayist and fiction writer Alex Baer. Alex, thanks for being here.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I love talking about issues through the frame of art. Alex's new book of short stories is Planet Grimm. It's a classic Portland noir literature looking at the confluence of all these issues every day, how they hit us as we get out of bed and walk down the street. Am I imagining that, Alex? What's your vision? Why did you write this book? What do you think it's about?
It's a collection also that reflects living in San Francisco in the 1990s. And as I felt more kind of estranged from the Bay Area and felt like I couldn't really live there anymore, having the type of life I wanted to live as a musician, then my husband and I moved to the best thing, Portland, Oregon, in 2003. But so it's kind of a mixture of that those experiences I had in like San Francisco's Lower Haight and also Portland.
So I think it's possible that it's the year 2017 right now. And I lived in Portland. I think I may have lived here since 1987. Oh, my God. I'll never be a Portland native, right? Which is funny. But we right now are looking at major changes in our society all over, all across the board. We're watching our language change even right in front of us. Right? I see people shifting from talking about racism to talking about white supremacy and all kinds of words in between. There's something about the city of Portland. There's something about this region. I mean, I guess you could say Seattle too, where this is my personal feeling about it. A lot of ideas start with art and they echo out from here. I'm thinking of the Concert Against Hate in the 1980s that was at Satyricon, and a bunch of artists wanted to basically clap back at what was called the Oregon Citizens Alliance that was trying to make it illegal to be queer in the state of Oregon and outlaw, birth control. And in that one event, and we've talked about this on these airwaves in the past, Nirvana got involved and all these bands, and it ended up being an MTV special started in Portland clapping back at the Oregon Citizens Alliance. It became a national thing. And I picked up this book, Planet Graham, and I'm looking at you, Alex. I mean, I think you're part of that tradition. So what are the stories about? What made you decide that you were going to put this collection together? I just want to dig into your sense of what's going on around here. Why did you decide to write these short stories?
Let's see. Well, some of them arose from when I got a master's degree in Portland State University. So some of them are more traditional short stories that follow that arc. But the characters in them, I think that a lot of them are marked by loneliness and wanting to fit in some way, and trying to understand their partners or decisions they made, or their child or their child that they placed for adoption. So there's a conflict between that loneliness or not understanding their circumstances and trying to make these noble mistakes. And so I think there's a lot of humor in it, as well as sort of like a soul confusion at the heart of it, And so how I put it together was, I had a good friend from the Bay Area named Leland Chook, who went through a health crisis. So he needed a bone marrow transplant, and he got it at the same day that he got a book deal. So to give back, he started this press, 713 Books, out of Brooklyn. And then he asked me if I wanted to put together a short story collection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but there's a lot of fragments in the story collection, and flash fiction pieces and a few experimental pieces. And that kind of came about as my own like little nuclear family was falling apart. So those pieces are a way for me to kind of explore how I was trying to put my life together after 26 years with somebody. Mm-hmm. So that's where the title actually came from. I was ironically describing my family situation.
A couple weeks ago, again, I think it is interesting and important to look at all the things we're carrying around with us. And as we walk down the street and get out of bed. And a couple weeks ago, our guest here was Giovanni Schoen, who talked about reclaiming her mentally ill son from the street, this long process. It's taken a year for her to do that. Sometimes I wonder if, as we look at the issues that we're dealing with right now, even like the global warming, again, what's in the news a lot right now is sort of the collapse of the federal government, I'll put it like that, and the deepness of the sexism. I don't know how to put it, that like the sexist oppression in our society that starts at the top, it goes all the way down. But it just, to me, it seems like this hits us in a family place. Call me a nut. I mean, I'm wondering about that. So many of the issues that I see that are coming down out of the woodwork, where we end up becoming hobbled as people, as fellow travelers, human beings right now, It's in our connections to the people that are closest to us. Those are the ones that seem to be the most important. So, and in a few minutes, I'm going to open up the phone lines. But listeners, I guess I'm reaching for a different meaning and different ways to talk about issues this morning. And Alex Baer, who is our amazing artist and writer, we're using her art to sort of look at why are we sort of, we're sort of cracking up right now. We're sort of losing it as a society and as individuals. So Alex, can you read some? She's giving me this look like, I mean, this is a lot. This is a lot of spaghetti on the wall.
I need more coffee.
can you read some? So Alex's, her book of short stories is Planet Grimm. It's fiction. But as you know, I mean, I'm just putting this out. Sometimes fiction gets closer to the truth than a policy paper does. I'm just putting that out. But so we're celebrating books. We're celebrating literature. Last week, we had a fabulous poet talking about Islamophobia. So now we're just going to literally look at some of the issues that we're dealing with every day through the eyes of Alex Baer, a novelist. Are you ready, Alex?
Yes.
And I do have my finger right over the dump button. So if dirty words come out, we got it covered.
This one, I chose one that has maybe one or two, but I think people can handle it. So this is called Wet. My husband breaks a slat of the bed I grew up in. It's a mahogany sleigh bed from the 1800s. The headboard is stained with handprint ghosts from our son's dreams. My husband sets up our son's new bed and mattress. He let our son use a box cutter to slice through the shipping cardboard, and it slips into the fake black leather. A small gouge. Say nothing. I say something to the boy, the almost teen, couched as an insult to the husband. He glares at me. This is uncomfortable. I go to my office, the third bedroom of the sad house. I have books and fabric scraps. I have dead friendships and active stomach bacteria. Famous people never email me back anymore. Was I boring? Don't answer. Don't answer. Yes. I have stained teeth and an undeniable love of cheese. If everything is out in the open, I can see it until there is nothing to see after all. Rectangular shapes and colors. Is it moldy? A closet full of secrets. But why? I have a bad gin headache and many unfinished projects. I can't find Advil. 4 coffee mugs and 1 espresso cup in the bedroom. 50 books I will never read. I have lost the sweetness, affection, lust, and pride in the other. I forget the pet names, but I remember. I give up the teasing. I transfer it to the cat. I live with a polite stranger, a slob. I am a slob. The top of my brain is pressing upward into my skull. It's all my fault. So should I stop there?
I think you should keep going. This was one of my favorite passages in the book, a book of many wonderful favorite passages.
Okay, I'll continue then. Mealworms can be ground into butter. They taste like cow's milk. This big D, not the blank, the divorce. I cut off my left arm with nail clippers. It hangs on. I can't snip the final pieces of dried out skin. The initial hurt, I saw it on my arm too. I'm in love with a flap cut into the shoulder. The cuts extend on either side, forming a bloody jelly roll. Not until death, but until legal documents coming through the email. At night, I tuck our son into his new bed. He says, "You and Dad are divorced on Sim City. I was a grandmother on that video game, rocking the baby. That gave our son points. Now my boyfriend is my husband's roommate, a black guy." Soon our son never visits that game anymore. Our family is in digital limbo. Soon I will never be married to my husband except in nightmares. Our son asks, "Is sperm white? Is it brown like poop or yellow like pee?" I say, "Ask your dad." I cry in therapy. Divorce is violent. My husband, a nice person, except when he swears, except when he looks at me sobbing on the chair, on the rug, anywhere. Our house is welcome to all tears. Moths eat the felt pads inside the piano. Fleas jump on our son's iPad. Maggots squirm inside the sesame seed jar. Their perverse dance. I destroy my liver. I grow a mustache. Our adolescent son screams. Now he's a toddler. Now he's an infant. He is in the womb. He's the cells that formed him. Does the egg scream when it's pierced by the sperm? The window doesn't fit right in the frame. It's an old house with a lot of potential. Where are those clouds I made of carbon dioxide words, my greenhouse gas of hate? Do they form steam in the bathroom? I'm cold. My husband drives to the dump with a futon stained with pee and tears. He tells me later he had wanted to drive off a bridge. 2 days later, he leaves the country for a year. My son and I spin in our rooms. 2 months pass, then snow. Mom, come out. The son, 12, shirtless, in shorts and sandals. He runs into the night, now white, like a healthy uterus, its tissue open to life. Flakes cover the harm, the cat's grave, the thorns, the suburban failure machine. I laugh at the sun for his snow dance, his delicious chaos. I make a snow angel, but the metaphor fails. The sun stomps it out. There are no angels here, so we raise our tongues to the stars. We taste what melts.
That was Alex Baer reading a story from Planet Grimm. Listeners, I got to put this back. I want to hand it to you, okay? Mm-hmm. Listeners, what do you think are the biggest stories from our lives that we should be telling right now? So many pieces of the imagery from that one piece just stuck with me. Like, you know, I've got 15, you know, all these projects I haven't finished, and famous people aren't emailing me back, and I've got 5 coffee mugs in my room, and what's my relationship with my kids? Anyway, listeners, what stories do you think from our lives that we should be telling right now, and how do you use art to cope with life, right? The number is 503-231-8187. How do you use art to cope with life? Alex, you know, when I was reading through this book, I just had my mind exploded with Walt Curtis's novel Malanoche, right? Oh. Where you could practically feel the grit of the sidewalk in downtown Portland. I'm thinking about Mitchell Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Who told his memoir of living here, growing up here. Gus Van Sant movie, My Own Private Idaho. Anything by Ariel Gore, set in the city of Portland. They're gritty, and I mean, I feel as if that goes to the identity of Portland as being a working class place, even though our identity is working class, even though we're far from working class anymore. I would say that. Although there's plenty of people living in the sidewalk. But when you go and do the art that you do, who are your influences? Who do you love to read or watch or listen to?
Let's see. I think my earliest influences were when I was in college and I was in the punk scene, but I didn't really relate to the hardcore punk scene, which was popular back in the 1980s, because it was really violent and kind of boring musically. So then my mind kind of expanded when I met a lot of kind of more experimental weirdo friends that were creating fanzines. And there was a lot of connection with Portland too, especially with Reading Frenzy. And I felt like there was like this cohesive, strange, you know, people like rolling around on the ground, creating art and music and not caring if they're wandering around, not wearing any underwear. And as a writer, I was more of like a voyeur on a lot of it, but I couldn't took a lot of it in. A lot of that kind of is in the book. And also the sense that every voice is valid, and that's why there's some found pieces in there. And I also teach at Writers in the Schools, and I want to say that's my main form these days of social justice, to try to validate every student's voice through fiction and nonfiction. And I'll be teaching a residency this fall. So and then they influence me a lot too.
Okay, and I was just remembering another author, Heidi Giroux, whose novel was The Girl Who Fell from the Sky. It's a novel about an African-American girl who grew up on Alberta Street. It's a mystery. Heidi Giroux, there's amazing authors that come from here. The question on the table, listeners, what do you think are the biggest stories from our lives that we should be telling right now? And how do you use art to cope with life? The number's 503-231-8187, and we do have a caller. Mike's on the line. What's up, Mike?
Oh, hey, good morning. Thank you for your guest and the discussion of art. Thank you.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I just want to say that, but seems like a theme that keeps reoccurring is something that I share with people, and it usually is meaningful. Like sometimes you share things with people and blah blah blah, you know. But this idea of you may be done with the past, but the past isn't done with you.
For and, real.
Yeah. But people seem to respond to it once you start to get into it, because at first people are like, but it's, you know, I've had good experience with taking people, not telling them about art and saying, oh, you should love this, but I would experience art and get involved with art.
What
and
I hear
that
you,
would influence people.
I was going to say was what I heard you saying at the beginning was maybe you were kind of talking about history. History, you might be done with history, but history's not done with you. That is such a fascinating frame for looking at our metro area right here in Portland, Oregon, which I've had so many choices to live somewhere else. I've always come back here. And lately I've gone, why? But what I kind of hear you saying is our history, maybe.
There's a reason.
Our history
there's
is
a
the
reason.
Stories.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, there is a reason. Yeah, it's a, people shouldn't be so freaked out about stuff because guess what? You know, there's valid reasons, right or wrong, for these things. So.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks a ton for calling.
Can I share something?
Oh, sure. As long as it's not dirty. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Not on my own. It's just I felt moved back in the punk '80s myself. There was a Susan Coe painter exhibit and. Susan Coe. She deals with a lot of extreme images, but a lot of interpretation in them, you know, and dealing with social issues and her own sexual abuse that happened to her, and also animals' cruelty. So, you know, you'd think it's pretty tough stuff, but I took a girlfriend that was having some troubles then to it. And didn't get much response. But it was like a month later, she's like, well, geez, why don't we go to these art shows anymore?
You know, it's funny you would say that, Mike, because, and thanks a ton for calling, Mike. The number to call, by the way, is 503-231-8187. What stories do you think we should be telling from our lives right now? And how do you use art to cope with life? And, Mike was so funny because he was talking about how he took his sweetheart to see a show and then there was a boomerang effect. Like weeks later, she's like, well, why don't we do that? Art percolates like one of those old coffee makers. It goes up and it goes down. It goes up and down inside you. And then maybe it spits out something that is surprising. We had started out, Alex, talking about who inspires you. And then you started talking about music.
Oh,
cracks me up because I'm so interested these days in... Well, I'm a writer, and I have certain brain children that are really close to me, and there's one in particular that's just been a problem child, an artistic writing project of mine for years, and this is a problem brain child for sure. And sometimes I found that the most inspirational thing for me to take in is poetry when I'm trying to write about nonfiction. And I love it that you brought up, you touched on a number of things. Alex, we're walking through the world and you're just broadcasting thought seeds all over the place. You mentioned the punk movement, right? And just the music scene in Portland in general and in San Francisco in the 90s and the 80s. Like sometimes I think in the 90s, everyone who lived in Portland was in a band, right? I was in the Mothers of God, and me and my friend Leslie got the heck beat out of us by the police. Another common thing.
Wow.
Fascinating. But as we're talking about these stories, Portland stories, and we're talking about noir stories, it makes me wonder, what is the essence of Portland? What is the essence of this place where we insist on living and trying to make things work?
Well, I think that I didn't feel like I could really share my writing when I was younger as a musician in various bands, because even though I had other female musicians that were my peers, I did feel like I felt too shy to share my writing. And it wasn't really until I moved to Portland that I met, actually it seems like it's more of a community of women that I see at a lot of readings, and that's where I've gotten a lot of strength, especially after my MFA with Karen Carbo's memoir class Through the Attic, and then individually with her. But I felt like I don't have to carry around the shame. I can write about my life and not feel ashamed for things I did as a teenager. And so it felt more like a woman-centered situation in Portland for me, as far as being, you know, feeling like it's okay to be kind of a mess up, but with the F word there. Yeah. and also just being able to explore different forms of writing, and have people enjoy it.
All right. If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. Today, we're talking with writer and musician Alex Bear. She has a new set of short stories out, and we're literally talking about In Our Zone. Now, I've been talking about Portland, but now I also want to stop and say there's White Salmon, Washington. There's Salem, Oregon, places that are outside the Portland area. I was just thinking about the novel Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest a couple weeks ago. That thing was published in 1962. Ken Kesey also published just a classic Oregon novel, Sometimes a Great Notion. If you've never read that novel, you need to stop what you're doing right now and go pick up Sometimes a Great Notion, especially if you care about how we live and our issues of race and class. You really need to go pick that up. But listeners, we're here during Thursday Morning Talk Radio, Voices from the Edge. We're talking about art. We're talking about writing, and how do social issues hit us all at once? How do we cope with life when all these issues hit us? And how, you know, do you ever use art to cope with life? Now, I'm just going to stick this out. In the city, in Oregon in general, in Western Oregon, there's a lot of artists. Lots. Like, I know someone who lived here who made fine art out of human hair and wax, okay? And it was gorgeous. So there's all kinds of art. But I'd love to start hearing from the artists that are listening. I know that there's people listening all over the zone right now. What stories do you think are the biggest stories from our lives that we should be telling right now? And how do you use art to cope with life? And the number's 503-231-8187. Don't wait till the end of the hour to call. I know that there's like seven people that are going to do that. They're going to be upset because they're not going to get on the air. But I mean, I feel as if this is one of those regions where we rock the whole world with our art. And it comes from the issues that we're dealing with inside. And it's funny because I'm just going to go through a little roster again. I guess this is a very crunchy, big, deep issue to drop on people that are used to taking one thing at a time, like affordable housing or whatever. But I do want to say, when you look at some of the amazing art that's come out of here about the way people live, I've been thinking a lot lately about Gus Van Sant's film, My Own Private Idaho. Okay. One of the things we've been looking at is sex trafficking, child sex trafficking. And then we're even looking at sexual abuse in Hollywood. Who starred in that movie? It was Keanu Reeves, yeah? Okay. I'm not even going to go there. You could look up Keanu Reeves and child actor. There's things that he lived through that, in my personal opinion, are kind of depicted in Gus Van Sant's movie. So you maybe sort of have art following life in that movie. But these are all looking at some of the crunchy working class issues, some of the gritty issues that real people deal with, that people build art around in the state of Oregon. So anyway, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. What do you think are the biggest stories from our lives we should be telling right now? And I kind of agree with Mike. I think history. I think we've lost so much of our history. And I think you were just talking about, I was sharing the story about the Concert Against Hate, which I had to be reminded of last year. That thing rocked the whole world, but it focused on the state of Oregon, right? But looking at some of these issues that are hitting the whole world right now, and you also mentioned Reading Frenzy. You know, Reading Frenzy was a hub of alternative culture, and now the owner of that is on the city council. Right? Literally. I mean, that's the kind of change that we're seeing. And Chloe Udaly, she's getting pinched. She's getting grilled like everyone on the council. But it's interesting. If someone had said to me 20 years ago, Chloe Udaly is going to be on the Portland City Council someday, I would have went, whoa, I'm set then. That's good news. I think that is good news. But can you talk a little, and we do have a caller, but Alex, can you talk a little bit about your sense of history? Like, there are historical roots in many of these stories. Do you feel that the history itself is important? I have relatives who feel like, no, only the now matters. What do you think about that?
Oh, yes. I grew up in Virginia where I felt really horrified by the Charlottesville attacks and how the president responded and all that, but also because I grew up in Virginia, so I felt like a lot of how children were taught back then is, you know, we learned about slavery, but we went to the plantations, and that was like a field trip, a good thing, you know, because we went to former presidents' homes, which were also plantations, and we filled in maps with colors showing the different agricultural produce of slave states, but it was more like a fun thing because you're coloring. So it was like this disconnect between how we're learning and experiencing in the world, and also learning that it was normalizing slavery to a large extent. So, you know, it definitely affects every single thing. Like we adopted a child who was born in China. And so I always feel like, how is he experiencing history and what America means from his perspective of being a different color than most of the people in Portland? So all the time. Yeah.
So what I hear you saying is, interestingly, looking at this issue of art and policy and how we take it in, kind of in a way, the system used art with you when you were growing up with kids to normalize torture. Where I grew up, it was making models of Father Sarah's missions out of sugar cubes. And it's the same thing. Oh, he enslaved people. Lots of people died from disease. Oh, it's a sugar cube, right? It's interesting to think about that. And we do have a caller. Steve is on the line. What's going on, Steve?
Oh, hi. It's an interesting subject. And I was just thinking about a current issue and the arts that I'm most appreciative of is music, and the current issue being the, you know, opiate epidemic, and that's getting coverage right now. But, you know, Tom Petty recently died, and he struggled with a heroin addiction. And you look at the, you know, the biopics on Johnny Cash and Ray Charles, and, you know, we think about the music of my generation, and there's so much great music, and I wonder, well, how much of that was, you know, the creation of such was, you know, by people who struggled with, you know, opiate addiction, and are we talking enough about, you know, the price that we're paying? We're paying such a heavy, heavy price in terms of the losses, and yet, you know, we can't look at the American, you know, music legacy without realizing that a lot of these artists were, you know, were experimenting. So, I mean, I don't have any answers. It's just a paradox. But if the art community doesn't, you know, talk about this honestly, about the health impacts, the societal impacts, the terrible price we pay from this epidemic, and we don't, you know, deal honestly with, you know, how artists, you know, are exposed and use this and are influenced by it, and our art is influenced by, you know, this, you know, these explorations into illicit drug use. I mean, this is a time when it's going to be talked about, and I don't know how artists, you know, will talk about it. I'm just a consumer of art that may have been created by those who struggle with addiction. So I just want to throw that out there as an idea.
Steve, I love you. I think that's an amazing example of what I'm kind of getting at. Also, Gil Scott-Heron, right, died of heroin overdose. But, and Alex kind of talked, you got issues in Planet Grimm around that same thing. Well, that came out wrong. But I feel as if some of your stories actually touch on that. But anyway, what do you think, Alex? I mean, and also coming from the music industry.
Right. When you were talking about influences, I saw the Ballad of Sexual Dependency in New York in the summer by Nan Golden. So I saw the actual slideshow with music that she presented, and a lot of her work is documenting the people that she knew and loved who were addicts, who were mothers, some of them were actually, you know, abusers, and she just kind of presents all that. She presents herself with a black eye, and it was very moving to me. It made me kind of like want to stop breathing. In my own experience, even last month, a friend of mine's ex-husband died of an overdose, and he's a father. It is, and he was a DJ and a musician and influenced a lot of people in New York. And I when I was thinking last week, I guess when the Me Too hashtag went out, I felt like there should be a Me Too hashtag for anyone who's been affected by people who are addicts, who are in this disease of addiction, and just, you know, sharing those stories, because often it's so painful, and I know that there's a lot of suicides that are related to addiction too.
You touched on that. I want to backtrack a second and say, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. I'm Lisa Loving. We're talking with writer and essayist Alex Baer. She has a new amazing book of short stories called Planet Grimm. She's going to be at Wordstock. She's going to be talking at a bunch of different places.
I'm going to be at Lit Crawl, which is on November 10th with Unchased Readers. And Lisa, you've taken part in that. That's a really cool event. Every third Wednesday of the month at Literary Arts, Jenny Forrester, who I read with at Annie Bloom's on Monday, she has a memoir out. She and I read from our works, but she's the curator of Unchased, and she's had more than 250 women or people who identify as women
amazingly diverse group of people from all over the world, all walks of life. It is an amazing group. Female-identified people.
So we're reading with also Mother Magazine based in Brooklyn, and I've written about inducing breastfeeding as an adoptive mom and also post-adoption depression for mother from my memoir that hasn't been published yet. So that's on November 10th. And November 11th, I'm doing a pop-up at Wordstock. And November 15th, I'm reading at Broadway Books with Gigi Little. She's the editor of City of Weird, which is a local phenomenon, and Brad Rosen, who wrote a really cool book called Bunky Spills.
City of Weird? What is that?
Oh, it's a collection of short stories that Gigi Little put together for Forest Avenue Press, and just with like amazing local authors. So everyone should buy it.
I do want to take a minute right now and say that you might be listening and thinking, what a bunch of elitists. Only elitists write. You could not be further from the truth. You could not be further from the truth. Especially at the Unchased readings, there's all kinds of amazing geniuses there. And it's not the people that you, it may not be the people that your stereotype tells you are authors or literary people. We do have a caller. Let's go grab that caller. Oh, the magical engineering pixie is working overtime right now. Let me just say, we are asking people, what do you think are the biggest stories from our lives that we should be telling right now? And how do you use art to cope with life? And we do have a couple callers. Sean's on the line. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, good morning. When I was born, like 1971, both my parents belonged to labor unions. I don't think we can talk about life in 2017 or talk about art in 2017 without looking through the lens of a broken labor movement. It seems like we're all kind of thrashing around, desperate to become professionals of some kind or entrepreneurs of some kind. And what we have basically is a population that has been broken. We're crushed, we're defeated, we have no organization, we're not needed as workers, we're not needed as consumers. And so we're just left to kind of thrash around in our death throes, and art is yet to really talk about that or address that we're like a defeated, superfluous population that has no organization. And, you know, I just think that would be a very rich area, I would think, for art to address the death of the labor movement and what it's like to see a once proud population go from being able to stand up for itself and assert its needs and so on and so forth, to a kind of broken, defeated, desperate, grasping population of broken human beings.
Sean, I want you to pick up this book. It's called Planet Grimm. Swear to God, I really want you to go pick up this book.
Thank you.
And I think Alex doesn't go through, she doesn't gazelle leap through each chapter saying, death of labor, movement. But you're really literally looking at the fabric of our lives and what it means, actually, what Sean just said. Sean, you know, the way I think of it is, I think that right now we are living in a post-apocalyptic world.
Absolutely.
And if you were the descendant of an African person who was enslaved, or if you are a Native American in the United States, you see that crystal clear. And the rest of us, like you said, like you're pointing out, we're, as some people say, waking up to some degree. to some degree.
Like 1999, you know, the WTO uprising in Seattle, I think one way of looking at it is kind of the death rattle of a nation in a way.
In many ways. The big public rejection of the World Trade Organization. It was unforgettable. Unforgettable.
Right, but also the kind of aborted attempt to stand up against global corporate capitalist tyranny and, you know, what the full ramifications of what that means to have that movement get crushed like that and, you know, the fallout of that, you know. And, it, you know, and I refuse to kind of, like, say, well, I'm a white guy and so I'm finally feeling what everyone else has been feeling forever. Because I think all along the labor movement was trying to bring up the entire human race. Yes, white guys benefited disproportionately from the traditional labor movement. But I think it, there was always the sense of social justice that everyone was going to be lifted up with a strong labor movement. So I'm not going to wallow in this white guilt BS, you know. But
can I ask a question? What labor union were you in?
Both my mom and dad were railroad workers, so the UTU.
Oh, okay.
And the clerks.
Yeah, my dad was in a union with a journalism union, actually.
Really? Okay. My dad was in PATCO. He was an air traffic controller in 1982.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. I'm actually from Aurora, Illinois. I had classmates whose fathers got fired by Reagan from the Aurora.
Thousands,
Illinois,
yeah.
Strike, yeah.
The PATCO, my God. Anyway, thanks a ton, Sean.
Thank you. Have a good day.
And I also want to say, Sean, just really quickly, be careful blanket condemning all artists for not doing something, because as soon as you say that a certain artist didn't do a thing, you're going to find out that 40 artists did it, but the New York Times didn't cover it. I mean, there's a reality of what artists do and then what we hear about. Art reporting is a different thing, right? And I see artists, all kinds of artists all over the zone, fighting to get their work out there. And the more grassroots it is, the harder it is to bring it to public attention. So, but you're awesome. And I hear Sean saying organized labor stories. What were you going to say, Alex?
Oh, when you were asking about influences, just a side note, Sherman Alexie's memoir was excellent. It just broke my heart a million times.
Do you mean his recent one that he just came out with? Mm-hmm. And he suspended his tour for it because it's about his family life. And you know what, listeners, if you are autodidactic, if you are a person who likes to teach yourself things, go look up some stories about Sherman Alexie's book that just came out and his experiences with that book and his decision about what he did with his author tour, because that is it's fascinating, and it's its own show. Can't talk about it right now. And we do have a full slate of callers. I can see that John is in there just literally juggling people.
Ouch.
T is on the phone. What's up, T?
Hey, I just had a couple things. The first was a correction. One of you guys mentioned a little while ago that Gil Scott Heron died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah.
He didn't die of that. It's speculation as to how he died.
Okay.
He suffered with addiction, but that wasn't what killed him.
Fair enough.
So I will go to further that, though. I will say my brother died of a heroin overdose about 2 years ago.
I'm sorry.
That was something that was weird because it happened on my 40th birthday. And, it's kind of weird because for such a long time, I would look at this heroin situation and the opiate situation in this country and be like, oh, it's crazy. And then my brother died from it, so I'm just like, oh, okay. So it's still kind of surreal, you know, dealing with that. Also, one more thing I'll touch upon. I like what the guy said before. It's good. Yeah, don't wallow in what people perceive as is white guilt. What we should be doing is sharing and building community. I think that's going to be the thing that get us, you know, out of a lot of these situations that we're dealing with.
Can I ask you something, though? What kind of art do you love? Is there a certain kind of art that helps you cope with these issues?
Oh, yeah. I'm a hip-hop dude. I'm a hip-hop dude. I mean, for me, you know, I come from a place that's really rough, right? But I've been in Oregon since, like, 1995.
This is Alex. My son really likes hip hop. He hates all of my albums, but I do have the NWA album, the classic. I won't say what the name of the band is. Anyway, but that still doesn't redeem me as cool. I'm still uncool. But if you say your name, I'll have him look you up on YouTube.
Are you a recording artist, T?
No, I'm just a fan.
You're just a fan.
If you want to turn your son on some stuff that's good, there's a lot of good local stuff. Like I like Mick Cakes. He's pretty good. Jumbo from Lifesavers is good. I'm trying to think of more local stuff that's good.
Mike Crenshaw.
No, Mike Crenshaw's awesome. I don't know he runs the station, but he's awesome. I love that guy.
Oh, cool. Thank you. My son's 13, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's a different generation. I'm 42, right? So, I mean, he might not be at the point where he's necessarily looking for something that's totally conscious, but Mos Def is awesome. I love Mos Def. Talib Kweli is awesome. Planet Asia is awesome. Truly a more conscious, just more conscious.
Sure, yeah.
Artist.
Sorry, what?
Go ahead.
I was just going to make a little joke that I downloaded some Kendrick Lamar and he was like, "Mom, no," because you know I shouldn't like anything that's cool.
Oh, it's all right. I mean, he's 13. My son was the same way, but it changes. Wait, give it a couple years and he'll come around. My boy's 18 and he's my best friend.
Okay.
I'm serious. It happens like that. You know, there's a lot of places like you can go to undergroundhiphop.com. You can look up a group called Mood and Wanna Battle. They're really positive and amazing artists. I mean, you know, it's really funny because I didn't realize we were going to shift, but I guess we're going to talk about art. There's a plethora of artists out here that are positive, that are just amazing. I'll tell you, one of my favorite artists is Cormega. He's from Queensbridge, New York. He's an amazing poet. He's actually one of Nas's counterparts. He came up in the same area as Nas, but he's a little less known as Nas. But some of the things that Cormega raps about are amazingly heartfelt. You know, I mean, he's very well-read. He's intelligent. But he knows how to speak to people who have ever had to endure the streets because Cormega lived it. And he's just, oh my gosh, he's an amazing artist. I got two albums to look up. Look up Legal Hustle and look up, what's the other one? Goodness, I can't remember. Okay, Legal Hustle's one LP. It's one of his first LPs. And then it's called, I can't believe I can't remember. But it's just 42 kicking in. Look up Cormega. Look up Legal Hustle. Look up Cormega. He's got some tracks that are amazing, like Therapy is amazing. He's just got so many tracks. Just look him up. I think you would actually like him. And over time, I think he's someone that your son would appreciate.
Thank you. When I teach teenagers like at Roosevelt, Lincoln, Cleveland, Madison, sometimes they feel like they're not writers. They'll say, like, am I a writer? Or they don't feel like they're a poet, but they need to bring in what their lives are full of writing, communicating, and also full of music, where the hip hop artists or whatever they're looking to are speaking their truth, and they just have to bring that truth out of them. And that's why I like Writers in the School so much, and that's, you know, they're a big influence on me, how to bring the truth of our lives out in a language that might be kind of odd or jarring, but really does kind of reach people.
Most definitely. That's the beautiful thing about children, is they're so truthful and honest and pure. I love that about kids. I don't want to take up all your time. You guys have a wonderful day, and thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. If you just tuned in, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving. We're speaking with essayist and fiction writer Alex Baer. We're talking about her newest book of short stories, Planet Grimm. And the question that we have on the table is, what do you think our biggest stories from our lives are that we should be telling right now? And how do you use art to cope with life? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And we have a couple callers on the line. Eric is on the line. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, I just like to say, we took the art to the extent that we had to sneak into Canada to play our music at an anarchist gathering in Toronto. We had to go to upstate New York to St. Regis Mohawk Indian Reservation, and the Indians gave us a ride in a flatboat across, and we played in Canada for about a week.
You're radical, Eric. So, like, just going back to the issue of art is a dangerous tool.
It is.
All right.
They were busting anybody that looked at all hip from the United States. If you had U.S. plates on your car, they pulled you over. Yeah, but the name of the band was MDC.
All right. Thanks a ton, Eric. Thanks for calling. Right. I think that art is like air, and we live it and breathe it, but we don't think much about it. Anyway, the number to call is 503-231-8187, and we have another caller. Erica. Erica.
Yeah.
What's up, Erica?
Hello. Hi, Lisa and Alex.
Hey.
Well, I have a lot of things. As people were talking and I was listening, I started thinking about so many more things I could say, but the thing that prompted me to call was that I see that money has become even more important, and like as a focus, it seems like, in our society. And I feel like when that happens, people don't value art as much. And as well, they're constantly just trying to make more money, and they don't have time, probably, you know, or the luxury of time to express themselves through art. And I think that causes a lot of problems because people are so pent up. And I feel like if people were able to express themselves in a healthy way, there wouldn't be so much anger and depression and things like that.
Erica, it's so interesting that you would say that, because I feel as if now you've brought to the table the missing piece of how our communities here sort of now have heated up to be a fake version of what we thought Portland used to be. So somehow Portland became the hot ticket. Yep. And, you know, that's the story of gentrification is ancient. I mean, ancient Rome was gentrified probably. I'm just putting that out. But it's like, why is it that I look around and see more amazing genius people with their fingers on the pulse of important things that should be turned into art, but those people just feel paralyzed because they have to stick with a job that they hate where the boss is being abusive to them. That one thing right there is huge, as a certain person would have said. But it's like, it used to be, you know what, I had a friend who inherited a storefront on Southeast Belmont Street in the 90s. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And his favorite thing was making homemade board games. The one that was called Get Christ was my favorite. And so he was in a position that, so this was years ago, he could just have this storefront, open it up, people could come and play the games that he made, right? It was just pure creativity. He could have that space, all kinds of people came and they would do experimental things. You just don't see that hardly ever anymore.
Well, it makes me think of, I've been here since the 90s. I'm from here, but my parents moved me all around and then I moved back. And there was someone lived in an apartment on Belmont Street, like three floors up, and they had like this pulley system and a basket, and they put sandwiches in it. And they brought the basket down. You just put a dollar in the basket and took a sandwich.
These are the stories that made Portland famous before.
Yeah, I mean, that's what was fun about Portland. Yeah, and I've seen the decline of a lot of that. And I used to live on Clinton Street for 11 years. And I love Southeast Portland, but now I'm in North Portland because it's too crazy over there for me. I'm over here where it's more quiet, but it's all going to catch up with me here too.
So when you say crazy, I think maybe what you mean is that there's so much turnover. There's construction of gigantic buildings, which, I mean, that we need more housing.
There's no
housing,
family.
But
there's no community. Everybody moved out. They couldn't afford the rent anymore.
Yeah.
So all my friends and community left, and then it just became Party Central, and people, and I had a 10-year-old, you know, at the time, and it was crazy, you know, people just walking by drunk and screaming and yelling, and it just wasn't real. It just felt like I was in some kind of fake reality.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Erica. Alex, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking about a couple of things. One is like the barriers to access that I see, you know, I am a white middle-class woman, but it's still hard for me to acknowledge, like, oh, I can apply for grants. I have validity. And I'm sure it's hard for a lot of people. And so RACC, like, they have grants for artists to help all artists, but people might not know how to access that. It's not really talked about. And there's even someone who will help you write a grant. And at Literary Arts, there's a lot of events there, but there might be barriers to feel like you don't fit in there. Lydia Yuknovich, she's a friend of mine, and she's trying to do so much to make everyone feel welcome. She has a book out called The Misfits Manifesto.
I was just going to say, Lydia Yuknovich.
Yeah. But she also is having these amazing grants, like $10,000 for a writer of color last year, and then this year, same $10,000 grant for a writer who's LGBT. I think that's the criteria. Anyway, and she also has a space downtown for people just to go in, write, hang out, called Corporeal Writing. And I feel like you have to, it's just hard. I just feel like going into high schools and seeing kids who are really struggling, their moms are heating their kitchens with the stove, and they have so many beautiful stories, but I feel like they might not feel like they can be a full participant in Portland anymore, because Because of the glitz or the, you know, sheen of Wieden and Kennedy and all that. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling, but
no. But what I hear you saying is, like, what are the obstacles to everyone who has like a deep seated art that they'd like to perpetrate, if I could say, what are the obstacles from that person to do that? And I mean, in the old, you know, years ago, we would just do our thing. You know, everything seemed to cost less. Just living here seemed to cost less. You could get by my husband was a street performer, right? That's how, you know, he was a street performer. I was a journalist, journalism and juggling. That's how we paid the rent. It seems impossible to do that now. And, you know, we do have another caller. Let's go grab that other caller. David, what's going on?
Yeah, how are you? Good. You know, for many, many years, I've been looking at the ancient three estates, and when you mentioned that you've got an artist, I'm wondering how they would face off against the ancient three estates.
What are the ancient three estates?
They're different pecking orders. So, in other words, there was the king or the aristocrats, there was the military, and there was the church. And so for centuries, you know, basically eons, the ancient three estates have come to power, and they've basically bolstered each other. And there are various times where the kings will be in charge, and then various times where the churches will be in charge, or various epochs where it'll simply be a military kind of dictatorship. But they're always the pecking orders that are kept in place, and the way I've looked at boycotting them, it comes to boycotting money, clothes, and superstition. And I'm just wondering how an artist would try to transmit that series of images. Seems to me that we as humans have always been locked in by a game that was set in place many, many years before we were ever born. Our parents were never able to comprehend it, and they were never able to prepare us for it. And so, you know, whether we get caught up in the fashion industry or get caught up in militarism and violence, or we get, beleaguered by religion, superstition especially, so that we're never able to be truly free while we're, you know, being, you know, our, you know, something like the imagery of a king having the finest raiments, and so the finest clothes represent the finest character. Well, we can see, you know, some of these congressmen and senators with $10,000 suits haven't got, you know, brain one.
So, David, I got to jump in here. We're starting to run out of show.
Sure.
I think your question is fascinating. Your point is totally fascinating. Like, and I think that's not even, I think that this idea of kings, churches, and military running things is not even necessarily just confined to Western societies, which is something that I often think when people have critiques. But I would encourage you to pick up this book, Planet Grimm, and think about your question. Read through these stories, because sometimes in the United States today, in our culture, we don't necessarily think in terms of kings, churches, or military. But here's another one I have to bring this up, and then we're going to go back to Alex and talk about all the places that people can listen to you talk. I've been reading. My family and I lived for a little while in southern France, and that whole thing about, you know, Provence, unbelievable. No, it's not like that at all. There's many terrorist groups operating in southern France. It's very aggressive. But I found this incredible author who's now passed away, who wrote a whole series of books, novels, just like Alex is doing here, about that region. The guy's name was Jean-Claude Izzo. I really recommend that you pick him up. Izzo, Jean-Claude Izzo. A three-part trilogy about Marseille, the Marseille trilogy. It is exactly about what you just talked about. Kings, military, and churches. So we are running out of show. My name's Lisa. We're here with Alex Baer. Alex, give us the wrap on all the places people can come and pick up your book and talk to you about music and art.
Well, I'm going to be reading on November 10th at Lit Crawl at 6 p.m. With Unchaste and Mother readers. Lit Crawl is, there's a huge website on all the events going on there. November 11th at Wordstock, I'm having a pop-up somewhere. It's also going to be online, the exact place. And November 15th at Broadway Books with Gigi Little and Brad Rosen. We're going to rock it. It's going to be like really fun. And then I'm going to New York in December, and back in January, in the next year, I have a few readings happening with different reading series.
Listeners, do the art. Do it. Do the art. And maybe hook up with one of us. We can figure out how to help you get connected to a resource.
Yeah, I have a website, alexbear.com, that lists events and reviews and interviews with me. I have a soundtrack on there. And
that's B-E-H-R. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Alex Bear. Catch her at Woodstock. Our engineer is John Shuck. Thanks, John. Stay tuned for Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. And thanks for tuning in.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, it's 8:59, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks to Eileen Miles about her new book, Afterglow, a dog memoir, ghostwritten in part by deceased pit bull Rosie. It explores geometry, gender, morality, evil, aging, and plaids. And at 11:30 on the Film Shell, filmmakers and organizers from the 44th Northwest Filmmakers Festival will join us in the KBOO studio. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Muertos PDX 9th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on Sunday, November 2nd at noon at Adio Cinema in Portland. Muertos PDX will be hosting its annual Dia de los Muertos celebration with musical performances, a children's story time, calavera decorating stations, mariachi, Katrina's traditional Mexican cuisine, and much more. A portion of this year's proceeds will benefit Oregon por Mexico for earthquake relief in Mexico. Again, that's Muertos PDX 9th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on Sunday, November 2nd at noon.